You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
It's not every week you hear Katy Perry in church, and I'm cool with that. You guys did an amazing job. Thank you very much. You can go ahead. Yeah, go ahead and turn it. Just turn it on. It's fine. There you go. Thank you very much. Well, good morning again. Welcome, and I hope you're having a good time this morning, because I am. There's some fabulous talent going on in this place, and it's so exciting to be able to use it for God. So, let me tell you a little story about something that happened in 2005, and that makes me really old. Because that was like almost 10 years ago. Do you realize that? I was counting out. What? 10? Not. Well, it's almost 10. You round up. Give me a little. Yeah, come on. I can do that. 5 and 4 and 14 and okay. Well, anyway, in 2005, the summer of 2005, I had an issue. And my issue, and I have lots of issues, but this particular one was a physical issue. And I had this problem where my left eye, so that would be this eye, my left eye was bloodshot. And now, I wasn't because of I was, you know, doing too much of something or drinking a little something or whatever. But I had an issue where it was bloodshot, and I need to let you know that I am an allergy-prone freak, okay? I'm allergic to, like, air. I've got all sorts of issues. If you invite me over to your home and you have a pet, and this isn't meant to be rude or anything, but I know the instant I walk in the door, no matter how hard you clean or anything, I can tell. We have a dog. I medicate myself. We figured out it cost me $365, a dollar a day, for me to live with my dog. Our little Jack Russell Terrier. And so I have lots of allergies, and so it doesn't take much for my eyes to get all bloodshot and watery and nasty, because it's just, yeah, I do it all the time. I mean, like right now, I'm thinking about it. Like, I'm probably allergic to, I don't know, there's plenty of things to be allergic to around here. So it was kind of like, it wasn't that normal thing, because it wasn't both eyes. It was just one eye. It was my left eye. And then I noticed that when I was, like, outside, this is the summer, it was August, apparently, as I was looking at some dates. And when I was outside, the sun hurt my eye. Not my both eyes, but my one eye. My eye is on you, Flint Lockwood. Remember that? Okay. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Anyway, my one eye was hurting. And so it was annoying, and eventually it was painful. And it was kind of freaking people out. Like, what's with the dude with the bloodshot eye? Like, ah. So I went to, and this is before I knew the great Dr. Beamer. So I went to my local doctor, who actually, they were going to send me to the ophthalmologist, which is different than an optometrist, and I have no idea why. But there's a th in the middle of one. So they were going to send me to the ophthalmologist, and actually he was on vacation. So they said, well, here, why don't we set you up with a doctor's appointment? So I went to an optometrist in town, and again, not greater vision eye associates. These were lesser vision, apparently. But anyway, so I went to this guy. He was great. He was a nice guy and all. But they brought me in, and he did, like, all sorts of weird, freaky things. Now, my eyes are super sensitive in terms of, like, get away from them. And he went up and had me hold it open. I couldn't hold it open, and doing the thing where my eye's blinking, he's like, keep it open, didn't work. So eventually he had to hold my eye open and got this little gizmo, and giant machine. You guys have been to the optometrist. Brings this big old machine in and looks in my eye and says, yeah, I see something in there. I'm like, good. Then he brought this little bottle of yellow. Have you ever had a little bottle of yellow at the eye doctor's? it is probably the greatest sensation of pain that I've ever experienced. He took this thing, and on my eye, I mean, just putting water in my eyes freaks me out. But he put this drop in there, and it burned into my ears. Like, it was just this painful, painful, painful sensation. And then he looked into it again and said, oh, yeah, sure enough, and looked at this thing, and it killed me. And I was crying. I mean, literally crying, not like, oh, because it was making my eyes water. I mean, that's what I said. But I was crying because it was coming and dripping yellow all over me. It was nasty. And so he put this thing in my eye, did a few other things and checked stuff and did things and made me do a handstand. I don't know, I guess that's part of the deal. And it turned out that I had a condition known as, and I will say this correctly, anterior uveitis, what is also known as iridocyclitis, Tyson, Clash of the Titans, and iritis. So it's got multiple names, iritis, uveitis, anterior uveitis, which is different than posterior uveitis and, I don't know, interior uveitis, which has to do with furniture. But I had anterior uveitis, and this is a condition, just in case you care, would like to teach you things around here. It affects approximately 1 in 4,500 people, and I was one of those people, and it's most common between the ages of 20 and 60. At that time, I was between those ages, with men and women affected equally, and at that time, I was one of those, too. So he did the thing. So this is my condition, and then he gave me those old people Terminator sunglasses. You know what I'm talking about? You know, those big old, like, yeah, nobody knows. I can't even see you. So those big old glasses. I said, wear these outside. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. But actually, at the time, the pain was so great from sunlight, from light, that I had to wear it. And so then he said, this is your condition. It's anterior uveitis. He gave me these little drops, and again, this whole thing with my eyes, it just was really hard for me to do, but I had to put in steroid drops in my eye. And when I did it, you know, aside from the pain, it had a really interesting reaction. As a matter of fact, I have a picture here of it. Let's see. That is it. So there's me. That's my left eye with the thing. I had another picture here, too, just for fun. Can you want to share that one? See? That was just, you know, hey, what do you know? Anyway, get back to my eye. So if you look at my eye, that's the way my eye looked all the time. My left eye was dilated from these drops, and I definitely freaked people out. And probably if I didn't have the drops, I still would be freaking people out. I mean, look at that. Anyway, so I had these drops, and I had to put these steroid drops into my eye and to fix it. Now, here's the deal, right? After I put the first drop in, by like the second day, two times a day, by the second day, this is supposed to be like a 2-week treatment. You can go off of that picture now, please. And it's freaking me out. Anyway, by like the second day, I was starting to feel better. And I felt fine. The redness was going away. The light didn't bother me as much. And so on the inside, I'm still like, yeah, you know, not a big deal. I'm feeling good now, so maybe I should stop. And the doctor was very, very specific. You need to keep doing this. And it might have been a month of treatment, now that I think about it. And I had to go in every week because they had to check up to make sure that my eye was reacting to the steroid drops and it was resolving this anterior uveitis condition and making things better. And so I went through this treatment of 2 weeks or 4 weeks, every week checking in. And eventually, I was cured. I was good. And the interesting thing, and this is not what I discovered this later, but that apparently, if I had not done the treatment, I could have gone blind in that eye. I didn't know that. I didn't do my research. I don't know if WebMD existed. That was back when we had rotary phones and telegraphs. But anyway, I didn't realize this. I wasn't aware that it was such a serious condition. Because he did say, you know, if this comes back, let us know right away. If this comes back, let us know right away. And I just did some research yesterday and found out that 10 to 20% of all cases of blindness in the United States are because of this condition. And so that's kind of scary, you know, to be blind in an eye. And obviously there's far worse things that people can deal with. But it was kind of an unusual thing. But here's the deal, right? After the second day, I felt fine. I felt better. It looked better. It was all right. And so I could have just stopped taking the drops. But if I had stopped doing that, it could have led to my eventual blindness. Because here's the deal, right? The feeling... Oh, man, I just hit a note. Feeling would not have saved my eye. The feeling doesn't matter. Doctors could care less about how I feel. What he's concerned about is it actually responding? Am I doing what I need to do to fix the condition? Because as much as I felt fine about it, feeling fine about it didn't do a thing. It was the action of putting those steroid drops in that caused me to be healed, that healed the condition there. Feeling didn't work, doing did it. And so what I want to talk to you guys about today, this is Valentine's week, you just wrapped up. And now I'm going to mess all of you up, hopefully, with how you expressed your love. Because I want to talk about love this morning, and I want you to get this point and understand this as we consider it. The shocking truth for this week is that love looks like doing, not feeling. No matter how I felt, if I did not do something about it, I would not have been cured. And I want you to understand that no matter how much you feel in love, love is not feeling. That's nice, and that's great for cards and flowers and all that stuff. But real love, biblical love, and not even biblical love, like Webster's definition of love, is that it is something that you do, not something that you feel. And so we're going to kind of explore that this morning as we spent this week chewing on love. And as, you know, Kendra read from 1 Corinthians, we're going to look at that passage as the band, you know, fabulously sung about this unconditional love that we need to have for one another. So if, in a second, we'll look at a couple passages, but if you want to go ahead and open it, like your paper Bibles or kick on YouVersion to 1 Corinthians 13, we're going to look at this passage that if you grew up in church, you probably have heard this passage a lot. And if you didn't, that's cool, because we're gonna talk about it this morning. But I want to look at this idea of doing when it comes to love, not feeling. And I should probably clarify that when we talk about God's love, we're talking about human love today. When we talk about God's love, like, there's nothing you can do. I said this before. There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. There's nothing you can do to make God love you less. So God loves you unconditionally. But our love for one another, if we just think of it as a feeling, we've missed it. Our love requires doing. Our love requires us doing something for someone else. And that'll make more sense in a little bit, hopefully. The first thing I want you to understand about love is that love is a big deal. Love is a big deal. We have this idea, we throw love around so much, and I'll share a story a little bit later about me throwing this word around back in one of my 30-some kisses. If you weren't here a couple weeks ago, you know, it's a different story. You can go to mcchurch.org and listen to the point. But love is a big deal. Here's how Paul is writing a letter, and we've talked about this before. What we call the epistles, which is a fancy word for letter. No, I didn't just swear. It's a fancy word for letter. And Paul would write letters to churches, because Paul was a church planner. And actually, 2 weeks ago, we talked about Paul and how he started churches, and how God took him, transformed him into someone different on the road to Emmaus, and maybe that was 3 weeks ago, I don't know. That's coming up in a series later. Okay, you don't remember any of that, because I didn't talk about that. So anyway, that's actually going to be the, April series? So there you go. So remember in April coming up in 2 more months. I'm like in the Matrix here. I can like see all sides of the future and the past. All right. Anyway, so that meant nothing. But at some point, we might learn about Paul. Forget it. He is a church planner. He planted a bunch of churches. And then he left, because that's what, you know, church planners do. They started one and left. I mean, that's what they did. That's not a hint. And then he would write these letters back to them, because he would hear about some of the issues and the struggles that they're going through. And so he would write a letter. And so one of the churches he planted was in Corinth. And he wrote a letter back to them. Now, the church in Corinth was messed up. They had lots and lots of problems. He actually had to write 2 letters, or big letters, and to help deal with some of their problems. But one of the issues that they seemed to have in the church was this problem with love. They didn't care about each other. They didn't love each other. And that's what the church is all about, and we'll talk about that a little bit later today. And so he had a problem with this. So he wrote this letter to them, and in 1 Corinthians 13, this is what he's saying to them. He says, look, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, let me just stop there. He's saying, look, if I could speak in any language, any human language, if I could even speak in some sort of angelic, fancy, supernatural language, and then he goes on and says, but do not have love, he says, I'm only a resounding gong. I didn't ask permission to do this. I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Sounds great, doesn't it? And we put him behind that. I have him do it all morning. He says, says I'm just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. He says, look, I could speak in a really crazy way. I could be the most educated language person. I could speak some supernatural angelic language. But if I don't love, that's what I sound like. He goes on and says, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, he says, and if I have faith that can move mountains, am I the kind of guy that I can see everything. I can see the future, the past. If you have a question, I can figure it out because I know all the answers. If I have all knowledge, if I have faith that is so strong that can move mountains, he says, but do not have love, I am nothing. Now, think about that for a second. I mean, he's saying, if I could do some crazy things, if I could do some amazing, supernatural, powerful, phenomenal things, but don't love, it's nothing. It's nothing. He goes on and says, I could give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast. He's saying, if I could sacrifice, I give everything I have and even sacrifice my very body. Which you're like, wow, that's pretty impressive. He says, but if I do not have love, I gain nothing. He says, if I don't have love, I'm nothing. Love is important. And this is the idea. This word love, we've talked about it actually a number of times in the last few weeks. It's this word agape. It's a Greek word agape. It's an idea of an unconditional love. It means that it doesn't matter how they act towards me. It doesn't matter what someone does for me. It doesn't matter if they've earned it, if they deserve it, none of that. He says this is a word that it means it's unconditional. It doesn't matter how you act. If I'm loving the way I'm told to love, if I'm loving the way Jesus told me to love, then I'm going to be doing these things without respect to how you react to it. Does that make sense? They don't need to deserve it. And Paul is saying, these people don't need to deserve it. Anybody that you love doesn't need to deserve it. But if you can do all these phenomenal things, but don't do it with love, pointless. It's nothing. You know, it's sort of like, I don't know, having a really, really awesome car that, you know, that's fancy and awesome, because I don't know much about cars. Justin asked me beforehand, he's like, it's a spark plug, right? That's where it jumps the circuit. And I said, yeah, that's right. And I said, that and the hole where the gas goes, that's about my extent of knowledge of vehicles. Spark plug and the hole where the gas goes. But anyway, if you had a really awesome car, but it didn't have any gas in it, it's pointless. And that's kind of what Paul's saying. You could have something that's great and phenomenal, but if you don't do it in love, it's nothing. So he's saying love is a big deal. And I just want to set that up to understand that love is a big deal. Love matters. It's not just some phrase. It's not a catchy thing. Hallmark didn't invent it. Walmart didn't invent it in December 26th because that was when Christmas stuff ended and they could put out the Valentine's Day stuff. This is something that God has put out there. The second thing that I want you to understand is that love is not a feeling. Love is not a feeling. Now, this might wreck you a little bit. We have this idea of feeling. It's a feeling. And then love. And there's that, like, butterflies. And, oh, I was near her. I was by him. He touched my hand. Choked on food right in front of my parents. That was a story of me when I first met her family. It was awesome. just spewed right in front of them at the dinner table. They invited me over for dinner, yeah. That was a feeling, too, but it wasn't a very good one. But this idea, somewhere we've got this idea that love is a feeling, that it's you feel it. And here's the thing, right? The problem with the feeling, and we'll talk about this in a second, but the problem with the feeling is that sometimes you feel in love, and that's great. Because we're getting married, and we feel in love. But what happens when you don't feel in love? Then I guess marriage doesn't really matter, right? Oh, we don't feel it. We're not in love anymore. But I want you to understand it's not a feeling. There are feelings associated with it. There's all sorts of neurons and electrons and capacitors and, I don't know, other things that happen in your head. But the reality is that it's not something you feel. It's something you do. So here's the story. Jesus knew this guy. One of Jesus' followers was a guy named Peter. And Simon Peter was this. Whoa, that was close. Simon Peter was his full name, and Peter was talking to Jesus before he was crucified and said, "Oh, Jesus, I'm going to go with you to the cross. I got your back, Jesus. I am with you all the way." And Jesus said, "Peter, man, I hate to say it, buddy, but before I die, you're going to deny me 3 times. And Peter's like, no, we boys. And Jesus said, "No, you're going to deny me 3 times. And sure enough, Jesus is taken away and arrested, and the trials happen. And during these 3 times, you know, Peter denied Jesus. And we said denied him. What does that mean? They said, "Hey, aren't you one of his followers?" He's like, "No, I don't know who is that guy? Look, he looks like he's dying." Like, that was the deal. Peter, 3 separate times, flat out said, "No, I'm not one of his followers. I do not know this guy. I'm not with him. I'm not one of his men." Then Jesus said, kind of followed through on his promise and rose from the dead. And Peter and Jesus met after this. And so Peter, of course, feels pretty awful. I mean, excited that Jesus rose from the dead and conquered sin and that whole deal. I mean, that was powerful. But there's sort of this relational tension there because, man, I guess when it came down to it, I failed you, Jesus. And I suppose we're all in Peter's shoes a lot of times. We think we can do it all. We'll be fine. And then we fail. We mess up. We sin. And the cool part is that Jesus didn't leave it like that. He restored Peter and he restores us. I mean, that's what his grace is all about. That's what his forgiveness. That's what his death on the cross is. I know we're going to mess up. So he died for us anyway. But here's the deal, right? So in John chapter 21, you don't have to turn there. We're going to come back to 1 Corinthians. But here's the situation. This is after breakfast. Jesus and Simon are kind of having a face-to-face. It's time for a confrontation moment with them. And Jesus says to Peter, "Simon, son of John," his full name was Simon Peter, "do you love me more than these?" And there's speculation what the these were, and we'll talk about that some other day. But he basically says, "You know, Peter, do you love me?" And this idea of feeling, Peter's like, "Well, yes, Lord. You know I love you. I love you. I feel it. I love you. You're my Savior." And I'm not mocking that. I don't deny that. But look what Jesus said in response. He said, "Then feed my lambs." And I'm not going to talk about what this means. Basically, Jesus is telling Peter, "Look, you're going to take care of the church. You're going to take care of my followers from now on." So we'll just leave it at that. But then Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, Lord." Going on to the next verse. "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Come on, I love you, Jesus." And then he says, "Then take care of my sheep." And the third time he then says, now, remember how many times Peter denied Jesus? Interesting. The third time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now, Peter was hurt that Jesus asked this question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep." Each time Peter talked about this emotional response to Jesus, this love, this emotional love, Jesus told him to do something. Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs. Take care of my sheep. Do something. Because Jesus understood that love was not a feeling. And he was setting that up in Simon Peter's, in Peter's situation here, saying, "Look, Peter, this love thing that you're talking about, it's going to require some work." And Peter went on to be a major part of starting the church that, you know, we literally today are connected to, because of something that Jesus did through Peter. So this idea of love not being a feeling, and I want you to understand that, it is not a feeling. It's not something you feel in and out. It's something you do. The point is, love looks a lot like doing, not feeling. Then the third thing, here's the thing about loving not being a feeling. It's also a choice. And I think that's important to understand. That when you love someone, you're not bound to your emotions and their response and your response to it. "Well, today I feel in love because she made the most wonderful dinner. It was the one I wanted. It's the meal that I like. She wore that really nice dress. Oh, I'm so in love. But last night dinner was burnt and she was wearing sweatpants, so I wasn't in love." Like, that's not the way it works. It's not a feeling. It's a choice. It's something you decide to do. And here's the deal. Like, ready? I'm gonna step on your toes, and I'm okay with that. But if you don't, love is a choice. If you don't love someone anymore, that's your fault. If you don't love someone anymore, that is your fault. That is your decision. You have chosen not to love someone because it's not just this feeling. It doesn't happen to you. And which kind of leads into the next thing. Love is not a cliche. We don't just fall into love. It just kind of happened. I fell into love. Like you tripped and broke your nose on it. I mean, it's not a cliche. It's not this thing. It's not something we just say, well, I love you. Don't just say it. Saying it. It's not a cliche. It's something you do. It's a choice you make. It's an action. It's not a feeling. It's not a cliche. You know, this idea of saying I love you. And the thing that keeps coming back to my mind, I got to be honest, as I was preparing this, was that ATU skit. Which was so well done about Greg telling Muffy, I get my names right here, that he loved her and then wasn't willing to do anything for her and help her out in her situation. And if you weren't here for All Tuned Up, it's great. You got to come each month, first Sunday of the month. They have just some fabulous stuff as we set you up as parents to learn and to understand where we're going to teach your kids this month and teach you, frankly. But this idea of saying I love you. I remember when I was in fifth grade. When I was in fifth grade, I'm looking at my daughter who's in fifth grade. I had a girlfriend or two, or like six or seven. I don't know. This particular one, I think her name was Colleen. Or was it her twin sister, Christina? I bounced back and forth between them a little bit. But I remember it was like, I just moved into a new neighborhood and new school, and I'm pretty sure it was Colleen at this point. And she had my phone number. This is back when we had phones, like, connected to wires and stuff. And I remember, you know, going, my parents had an extra line put in for the internet, for the modem. We were cutting edge. That was the way the internet worked. And then you waited, and, like, you went on to AOL, or you had CompuServe, you know, your email address was like 612954830.68455@CompuServe.com. Talk about personal. Anyway, so off the subject. Phone line. So I went down to the extra room that had the extra phone line, and I called Colleen. My friend Jessica, and she was a platonic friend, whatever that means. She was from Pluto. She was there with me, and she's like, are you going to call her? I'm like, yeah, I'll call her. And Jessica and I were really good friends. And so I called her and talked to Colleen. And we're like, hey, how's it going? Good. Saw you in math class today. Yeah, saw you. You did a really good job sharpening your pencils. Thanks. All right. Well, are you going to go to gym tomorrow? Yeah, I guess so, since I have to. Yeah. Saw you in English class. Yeah, I saw you too. Going to go to English tomorrow? Probably. Okay, well, it's good talking to you. I love you. And I hung up. And my friend Jessica smacked me. And I'm stupid young. I'm still stupid, not young. But I'm a stupid junior high boy, or not even junior high, elementary school boy. And she's like, what are you doing? Why did you tell her you love her? I'm like, isn't that what you do when you're done on the phone? Like, I love you. She's like, don't tell her you love her. You don't even know her. And my friend Jessica, who probably doesn't know much about love, at least not in fifth grade, but knew a lot more than me, and said, don't just use that phrase. You can't just say it. You got to wait until it's ready, until it's time. And until, you know, then you feel like you can say it. So I'm like, oh, okay, like 3 days? Yeah, that's good. Okay, good. Because by 5 days, I've already broken up with her, and I'm dating her twin sister. So dating. That meant that I saw her in English class, and I saw her in math class. And maybe I sat next to her in lunch class. In the cafeteria. But anyway, so this idea of it being a cliche, it's not. Like the words I love you, while they're romantic and men, women, say them. Say them often. Tell them to your children. Tell your kids you love them. I mean, go home. Get in the car. Tell them you love them. Because it's important. It's important to hear that. But don't just say it and think that that's the end of it. Don't just think the words are the answer. Like, love is saying I love you. Because it's not. It's not a cliche. Love is doing something. It's more than the words. So here's what later in 1 John. John's all about love. So if you want to learn more about love, read John, written by the disciple John, a follower of Jesus John. And then he wrote three letters, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And in 1 John chapter 3, he says this. He says, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. So he said, Jesus is the example of love. Jesus sacrificed himself for the sake of us. So we ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need, kind of going back to what Paul said, you know, if you gave everything you had to the poor, but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? Dear children, let's not merely say that we love each other. Let us show the truth by our actions. See, John is saying, look, it's not the words. Saying I love you and not doing anything about it doesn't mean anything. Do something. If you say you love someone, then follow it up with your actions. Because it says, let us not merely say we love others. Let us show it by our actions. Show the truth by our actions. It's doing something. Love is not a cliche. It's not this thing we throw around. It's something we should say again. You can buy flowers. And if you don't, Bruno Mars will sing a song to you about not buying her flowers when you should have. And it gets sad. But anyway, he's a singer. He was in a game called the Super Bowl. He sang at halftime. Anyway, so moving on. Love is not a cliche. It's not this simple thing it's not just something we throw out. So all that to say, love is a big deal. Paul says, look, you can do all these amazing things, but if you don't love, you're nothing. Love is not a feeling. Peter, I feel like I love you. Jesus says, no, do something, Jesus tells him. Peter, feed. Peter, take care of. Do. John says, look, love isn't just something we say to people. He says, if we say we love, back it up with actions. If you say you love your wife, then show her by what you do. If you say that you love your husband, if you say that you love your kids, if you say that you love your neighbor, then why are you not helping them shovel their snow? Say something doesn't mean anything. Doing it is what matters. So all that to say, what is love? And that brings us back to 1 Corinthians 13, where we learn that love does. Love is a big deal. Love is not a feeling. Love is not a cliche. Love does. Love does things. If you are loving someone the way that the word love means, what the word love means, then you're doing something. And this is what he goes on and says in 1 Corinthians 13, 4-7, which is what was read earlier. And we're going to take some time here and just chew on it. So he says, he just finished, by the way, this is right after he's saying, you know, if I could fathom all the mysteries, if I could speak in all these languages, if I give everything away, but I did not love, I'm nothing. Then he goes on and says, love is patient. The word patient here is a Greek word that means to suffer long, to endure, to put up with, not given to hasty anger. We talked about anger 2 weeks ago, this idea of flying off the handle and hulking out. Paul says, look, love doesn't react in anger. Love is patient. So he says, if you're loving someone, if you say that you love them, are you patient in how you respond to them? Or do you react right away? Do you rip the chore chart right off of the fridge and throw it to the ground? Which is what I did yesterday because I didn't like it. Because I responded in anger. But it's patient. Is that how you love? Is that how you interact with people? Are you a patient person? Because if you're not, you're not loving them. Goes on and says, love is kind. That's kind of sounds like, I don't know, a girl in a dress pulling a wagon. Kindness. That's, I don't know, just a little, you know, kitty. It just sounds kind of wimpy. But obviously it's in the Bible and Paul's talking about it and Paul's got quite the story to share. And so maybe it's not just some wimpy little thing. Maybe it's something that we need to do as we treat other people. Are you kind to people? And do you treat them with kindness? Do you treat them like a sweet little girl in a wagon, pulling a wagon? I don't know why. She's got flowers in her wagon too. She's pulling them to give them to you so you can give them to your spouse because you should have bought her flowers. Anyway, are you kind? He goes on and says, love does not envy. I like the way the Message put it. Eugene Peterson writes a different paraphrase of the Bible. He says, love doesn't want what it doesn't have. The way you love people, do you love them to get something from them? Does your love, is it based on what they can give you, what they've got that you want? Because real love doesn't envy. It doesn't want something that someone else has, what you don't have. Love does not boast. It's not boastful. I mean, if you love someone, then you're not going to be showing them how much better you are than them. You don't need to prove it, because that doesn't mean anything, because love doesn't boast. If you're loving someone, you don't need to prove your superiority, or look how good you are, look how awesome you are, how perfect you are, or how nicely manicured your lawn is, or how, I don't know, nicely manicured your fingers are. It doesn't boast. He goes on and says, love is not proud. Now we're starting to get a little personal here. Love is not proud. The word is, it's a cool word. It's physiou. And that's kind of fun to say, physiou. But the word literally means to inflate. So it's a word that you would say, oh, wow, yeah, look, my tire is a little low. I need to go physiou it. I think you should go to the gas station and say that, like bring it into the service center. It's like, oh, what's the problem, sir? Well, my car needs a little bit of physiou. And just see what they say. But anyway, it means to inflate, to inflate, to puff up. And love is not that way. Love isn't proud. And I think there's so many times where this idea of arrogance and pride just short circuits love. Because our pride doesn't want to admit we're wrong. Our pride doesn't want to say, you were right. Our pride doesn't want to say, I'm sorry. And if we're not willing to do those things, then we are being proud. Then we are inflating ourselves. And I think some of us need to get off of ourselves and just admit when we're wrong, admit when we failed. Because if we're not doing it, we're not loving. So you can say you love your spouse all you want, but if you're not willing to admit when you fail, you don't love her. You don't love him. Love does not boast, or is not proud. Love is not self-seeking. We kind of touched on this a little bit before. You know, there's two words here that make that idea self-seeking. It means to look for yourself, to seek yourself, to obtain yourself. Are you loving for the sake of what you can get out of it? Is someone loving you for what they can get out of it? If that's the case, then it's not love. It's not. You can use the word love all you want. You can put masks all over the word. But it's not love. If you're doing it for the sake of something that you can get out of it, maybe it even makes you feel good. Maybe because you feel you need somebody. And so, I need to be in love, so therefore I have them. You know, maybe it's because you want something. You know. And again, I'm not just talking. Don't miss me. I'm not just talking about marriage and family here. There's love is something we're supposed to be doing to our neighbors, and we'll talk about that. But if you're loving them, you love that neighbor because you know that if you help them now, they'll help you in the summer with their whatever project. They've got the really nice rototiller, and you know you want that. So now you'll help them shovel out their snow. Like, that's not love. That's self-seeking. That's what you want, getting what you want out of it. Not easily angered. That's what he says. Love is not easily angered. To be greatly distressed, the word means angered, irritated. Love doesn't get irritated. And I guess I hope I'm making sense here, too, that I think Paul understands that we're not perfect. I know he understands that we're not perfect, I don't think. And so when we go to love, we're going to always be inadequate in the way we love. We're always going to fall short. That's what Jesus is all about. We're going to fall short. We're going to fail. But I think the issue here is let's strive for these things. And so this idea of being irritated, I mean, do we get irritated with people? Yeah. Do we respond in anger? Yeah. Does it happen a lot with some people? Yeah. Are there certain people that you're like, why are you like that? Like, God didn't make you that way. Yeah, there's people like that. Does that make it right that we get irritated, that we get anger? No. No, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago. You know, there's no justification. Like, anger is sin. It leads to sin. It's an issue. And so when it comes to this issue of being irritated, love, we might be irritated, we might fall short, we might mess up, but let's strive not to. Let's strive to be patient. Let's strive not to let those things get under our skin. And, you know, I've actually, there's multiple people in this room that I've married or I'm going to marry, aside from my physical marriage to my wife. I mean, perform their ceremonies. But one of the things we talk about in our premarital counseling is, you know, like, I don't know, I'm going to make up a number because that's what pastors do. Like 97%, 97.2% of conflict in marriage, in relationships, is communication. There's a failure to communicate. And I think if we understand that right away, that they probably didn't mean what they said, maybe we wouldn't get so easily angered if we just assume the best. And we're going to talk about that in a couple months, actually. So let's go on. And not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. This one, it's like Paul said, love is patient, love is kind, love is not self-seeking, is not easily angered. Then he has like a parenthesis here and says, Sean Fitch, read this. There's like a little note in my Bible. I don't know if you have that. But Paul wrote that in there. It's inspired. The Greek is, what you doing this? What you doing there? Yeah, it's Greek. But anyway, it's like, it keeps no record of wrongs. This is such a hard thing. Paul says, love doesn't keep track of that. And the word actually is an accounting term. It's the kind of a term that we use in the bank. You know, the bank is keeping track. They're keeping track of your record. It's also the same term that is used in the court system. That the court system would keep track of, you know, what's on your record. You know, are you, oh, okay, yeah, you've got a misdemeanor, you have this parking ticket, you have, like, that's the same word that's being used here. It says love doesn't do that. It doesn't keep a record of wrongs. It doesn't keep a track of all the times that you fail. And I'm good at that. You know, and maybe none of you are, it's just me, because he wrote it for me. But Paul says, look, if you love someone, you've got to let it go. You've got to get over it. No matter what happened that one time that we had that one bad meal. Literally, like there was one bad meal in the history of my marriage that was just not good. And I still bring it up. So apparently, I am not loving her. But that's funny. But how many times do we keep, oh, well, yeah, there was that time you did that, and I don't know if I could ever forgive you for that. There was that thing that happened. Oh, I say I forgive you. I say I love you, but I'm keeping track over a year, and you know what? You can say you love them all you want, but it's just a bunch of crap because you don't, because you're keeping a record of their wrongs. Love doesn't do that. Love says, okay, you know what? And the word wrong here, it's this idea of messing up. And let me tell you, we each have huge records of wrongs. We have a huge list of stuff that we didn't do the right way, stuff that we messed up, stuff that we failed at. Stuff where we were like, this is what we were supposed to do, and we didn't. Sometimes we did it because we didn't care. Other times we're like, no, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to do that, and then we did. And that's all part of that list. And Paul says, love doesn't keep track of that. It's gone. It's in the past. I've forgiven. We need to let it go. And that's what love is. Love doesn't bring that stuff back. And I think this is one of the, in my opinion, one of the hardest things on this list. Because we still have that kind of in the back of our heads. Well, there was that one time. And it ties into some of the things we're talking about here in just a second. But keeping no record of wrongs. It does not delight in evil. You don't delight in evil. I mean, if you take pleasure in seeing someone else suffer in any way, let's call it getting what they deserve. Let's call it comeuppance, which is one word spelled with lots of letters. Let's call it, you know, payback. Let's call it karma. If that excites you, when you see that happen to someone, that's not love. Oh, they had it coming. Paul says, you know what? You don't delight in that. Because if you do, you're not loving them. And Jesus says to love your neighbor. It's to love basically everybody. Does not delight in evil, but instead the response is rejoices with the truth. We need to be excited about good things when good things happen, when you see people's lives change, when you see them taking little steps. At the meeting next week, we're going to share some of those stories. At our elders meeting every month, we sit around and probably spend the first hour, I don't know, just sharing. What have we seen God do at MC3 this month? And they're so exciting. They're so cool because sometimes we're in the middle of the trench and we're working and we're digging and we're doing the hard thing. We don't get to see some of the stuff that's happening out here. And we start to take notice of that. We're like, wow, this is exciting. And love rejoices in that. Don't delight in when someone gets... Be excited when they take a little step. You know what? That person showed up to church. that was really cool. You know what? That person just, they talked to me. I didn't think they would talk to me, and they talked to me. Like, rejoice in these positive steps. That, you know, wow, that neighbor, that coworker came over and offered me their stapler. Like, that's really cool. You know, be excited about these little steps. Rejoice in the truth. And I think that's, you know, human nature. We want to see huge things. We want to see, okay, MC3 started in October of 2011. So by December of 2011, we expect 5,000 people to be attending this building. We have lots of issues. But we have lots of issues anyway. But can we celebrate? Wow, look at this. Look at the people that are in this room right now who many of didn't even go to church, weren't interested in Jesus, and now are at least hearing, hey, there's hope. There's something in Jesus. And I think Jesus talks about that. The angels celebrate over one person. So, and this idea of rejoicing with the truth, celebrate the wins. So, moving on. Love always protects. The word means to stand up with, to endure, to protect, to cover. Love means you're protecting those that you care about. And the interesting thing about this concept is that it doesn't always mean you keep them from the bad things. That's sheltering. That's a little bit different than this idea of protection. Sometimes love says the hard thing. Sometimes love says the thing that you know might hurt a little bit, but because it's truth, because they need to hear it for their benefit, love is going to do it. So this idea of protection isn't just, hey, keep everything away from them. Don't make any bad things happen. Around our kids, whatever. Sometimes love says, no, this is something you need to know. This is something that's going to be hard, but it's true and you need to hear it. So love always protects, always trusts. This kind of comes back to the no record of wrongs. Love always trusts. No matter what happened yesterday or last year or last decade, love says, I trust you. And trust is dangerous. Trust is vulnerable. Trust leaves us exposed. But it's love. Always hopes, and I guess this ties in nicely with that. Love always sees the best. Love says, hey, you know what? Not ignoring sin. We're not just going to say, oh, it's not a big deal. Because again, love protects. So love might say, what you're doing is sin. You need to stop it. You do it in a loving way. But love hopes, says, hey, I believe in you. I believe in the best for you. And then finally, love always perseveres. Love endures. Love doesn't quit. Love doesn't fail. Love doesn't stop. Love doesn't give up. Love, if you are saying that you love someone, then you will not quit. You will keep doing it. You will not give up. You will press on. And is it always going to be easy? No. Is it always going to be fun? No. Are there always going to be little girls pulling wagons with flowers and everything's fun and simple and No. But love keeps going anyway. Love doesn't change when the courts say, okay, let's figure out this paper. We can just sign this off. Divorce, you're done. You're done loving. That's it. And I know it's way more complicated than that, but understand that love perseveres. Love keeps going, even though we feel like we don't have anything else to give. Love does. So love is a big deal. Love is not a feeling. Love is not a cliche. Love does. That's what love is. Because the shocking truth is that love looks like doing, not feeling. Let's not start throwing this word around meaninglessly. Let's not throw it around and think that we love people or talk about how we fell in or fell out or it feels all mushy and gooey inside. And dude, I've been married for almost 15 years and I still feel mushy and gooey inside about my wife. I think part of that, I'm not a psychologist or sociologist or psychotherapist or whatever, but I think part of that is because we work at this. We work at this loving thing, and I fail a lot. Honestly, I think she fails way less than I do. But because of this package of love that says love is doing something, the other stuff kind of follows. it still happens that way. So, and that's not, you know, this is just my experience. It's not biblical to say that, but I think there is something to say that this is what we need to be doing. So here's the deal. Jesus wraps up this whole thing. Paul already talked about this. I'm going to go to what Jesus says. He's talking to his disciples at one point in John chapter 13. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." One another is everybody. That's your spouse. That's your kids. That's that weird old uncle you've got. That's your neighbor. That's your other neighbor that's really annoying. That's your coworker. That's the guy behind you in traffic. The person in front of you in the grocery line. Love one another. And so here's the deal, right? And this is MC3. We talk about our C3 process. Community, congregation, caring. Community, prime groups. We feel that God wants us, the Bible is clear, the church, we should be in relationship with each other. We need to be connected with each other. That's why we have prime groups. That's why we believe in it. That's why we push them. Because the way you can learn to love other people is by getting to know them. And you can find out things. And there's been stuff happening over the last couple months that are just crazy about the way people are seeing needs and helping them. That's loving one another. The other C3, caring. And that's the idea of loving those outside of our church, loving those, like finding ways to care for people. It's all about loving one another. And then, of course, the greatest commandment was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that's what this part is part of. Learning, worshiping, loving God with everything you got. See, love is such a big part of everything we do. Not just as a church, but as followers of Jesus. And here's the cool thing that Jesus says is, you know what? People might, they're not going to necessarily see that you're a follower of Jesus just because you do Katy Perry songs in your church. Just because your church meets in a garage and people dress a little bit differently, or you got a cool sticker on your car. Like, none of those things are going to change people's hearts the way it can if you love them. And love them the way Jesus has told us to love them. Serving, because love is doing, not feeling. If you want to change people, love them. Love them when they don't deserve it. If you want to see your marriage grow in a healthy way, love them when they don't deserve it. Love them when they show up late every night, even though they say tonight's going to be different. Love them anyway. And I'm not excusing sin. I'm not saying, okay, well, since they love you, you can just do whatever the heck you want. I'm not saying that. But let's just try to love by doing and get away from this feeling and this saying and leaving it at that. It's an action. It requires work. It requires you to work. And work is hard. And we're lazy. We don't like to work. But if you want to truly love, and if you want people to see something different about you, it's going to require you to love them. Let's pray. God, thank you for your word. I thank you for, this passage covers tons of different things about love and the way we need to respond. And I pray that you would just show us one or two things that we need to work on. And consciously work on loving by doing in those areas. Maybe it's patience. Maybe it's not keeping a record of wrongs. Whatever it may be, God, I pray that you would show us just one or two things that we can walk away from here and say, I'm going to love differently that way. And God, I pray that as we do that, as we step out, as we make ourselves vulnerable, that we will see hearts change because they see something different about us because of our love. Maybe that's our spouse. I mean, maybe that's our kids, our family. The ones that are closest often see the ugly side the most. Help them to see the good side of love. Maybe it's someone that's just far from you that doesn't even know that there's hope in Jesus. And I pray that they would see that through our love. So God, may you work in our hearts. May you change us from the inside out as we learn to really grasp this idea of loving by doing. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.